I'm Julia Hidalgo. I'm with George Washington University, and I'm going to talk broadly about a project that we're undertaking with one of our colleagues who's going to talk next about one of the performance sites. And I want to emphasize in our session presentation today is going to be slightly different from the first two because we were wanting to look very specifically, since we're in the middle of our project, at actually what linkage and retention and engagement and navigation services are so that we can explain to you how to do them so that you can replicate them in your communities. So since we're in the middle of our data collection, I'm going to particularly focus on that, and then Dr. Kwakwa from Philadelphia is going to present some local evaluation data. I'm with the National Program Office of the Merck Foundation's HIV Care Collaborative. This is not federally funded, so I am very conflicted since they're paying for this. And we have three performance sites, and you'll hear more about them in a few minutes. First of all, the Merck Foundation did a unique process in selecting not only the project but the sites. They conferred with a bunch of experts and said, what should we pay money for and where should we put the money at? And came up with, as you can see here, three sites. The National Program Office came online after the sites were selected. In two of the sites, both the Philadelphia and Fulton County, otherwise known as Atlanta sites, there were no linkage and navigation activities underway in those communities for HIV at the time that the sites were selected, whereas in Houston they had at least 26 service linkage workers in the community. Those were the ones we knew about. So they were already very saturated. Just generally, the sites were selected because they're very high incidence. These are not only old epidemics but continuing to be unmanaged epidemics. And if you believe the data from Unmet Need for the Ryan White Program, there are an estimated over 26,000 people that are aware that they're infected in these three communities but are not in care. So the need for not only linking folks into care quickly after they are told of their infection and then relinking folks afterward is really critical in these three communities. So just some sort of gross detail in terms of the differences in the three sites. First of all, Fulton County is your traditional public health clinic. They operate in their main site, which is a pre-segregation health department. There are two of everything, very old, very sort of STD kind of flavor in terms of the waiting room. Everything needs to be upgraded. And it is in a very high-risk community right across the street from Grady. There's one clinical site there. There also is the TB program there, the STD program there, as well as their HIV services all in one place. Aid Atlanta is the case management agency. So case management is slightly removed from integration in the care team. And then because of order of numbers and the capacity of the clinic, at the beginning of the project, they decided that they would transfer their very ill patients that were coming in for initial linkage and treatment over to Grady because they just were not fully capacitated to provide services to a lot of very sick people, for which they've identified many sick people. The City of Philadelphia Health Center sites you'll hear more about today, they have eight health centers that are very dispersed across the city. They use a very integrated care team. It's really a sort of SWAT team model that integrates linkage workers with social workers, psychologists, clinicians, and so on. And they have a very intensive team model. And then the City of Houston, once again, is the kingdom of all service linkage workers. The original plan for the Philadelphia and the Atlanta sites was that they would focus on newly identified individuals and bring them into care. However, with the Houston site, because there are already workers that were focusing on the linkage component, they identified their strategy being relinkage. And there are, once again, thousands of folks in Houston that need to be relinked. And so what they're doing is really sort of a traditional surveillance list generating looking for folks in the community, tracking them down using a DIS model, and then attempting to link them and carry if they can find them. And I'll talk more about the success and the relative merits of that project. They are totally outside the clinical team. They basically bring the clients in, hand them over with a warm gesture and maybe a little case conferencing, but they do not provide ongoing services from that point. Once again, the flavor of this presentation is about what we do and how we do it, and I think it's important to understand that the linkage workers are not only the legs of the project, they're also the heart of the project, and generally we are very careful to be looking very in-depth at the workers themselves, understand what they're bringing them into these jobs, and we've also done a whole set of back-end activity to talk to them about what we should be doing when we go to hire workers and who they should be, what they should look like in terms of their experience, their personal characteristics, and so on. The folks that we have employed are on average somewhat seasoned individuals. They've been in the field for quite a while. They're very similar in demographics to the work, to the clients that they're assigned, predominantly male, predominantly African American in two of the sites, and then in Houston, more Latinos are presenting there. And they've been working in the field for over 10 years on average. Most of them have a lot of practical experience. They're road tested. They know about how to go out into the community. A couple of them have been long-term DIS officers. So they really are much different than an earlier project that I had that used peers. There were all 18 to 24-year-olds who had never had a job before and basically all got fired in the middle of their exploration of employment. Yes, that would be the Young MSM of Color Initiative, not a model to replicate. In terms of their time and employment, this is now, we're about 2 years into the project, and so they've been working on average for slightly more than a year. We had a very slow start, so the actual ramp up and hiring that I'll discuss in a minute was pretty slow. Turnover is, with these projects, and I'm sure many of those that you're involved in, turnover is substantial and to be expected. These are all public health settings. To replace a person takes glacial time. To hire a person is excruciatingly painful. And so every loss of a worker means discontinuity of services, a lot of disruption of the team, having to double up on caseloads and so on. I do like to report, however, that none of our folks were fired, so that in and of itself is a good finding. Because there are boundary issues with this employment. In terms of the educational attainment, which is, I think, somewhat unique, a large proportion, actually the largest proportion of our folks, have baccalaureate or at least some college education all the way up to one person who has a doctorate. And, yes, she really loves her job. That's why she does it. We have also some folks that have no high school diploma and are relatively low literacy but have worked in the community for many years and bring a lot of experience and heart to their jobs. So just in terms of who's included in the criteria for our project, they cannot be incarcerated because we can't consent them. They have to be adults. We had originally thought we would focus predominantly on newly identified individuals that are seropositive. We need to confirm, obviously, that they're seropositive. And because we're feeding into the Ryan White program, they have to reside in the jurisdictions that we're working in. In terms of the activities, and I want to make sure that I discuss what it is that we expect them to do, because a lot of the evaluations we do, we sort of assume they do things. We don't know what those things are, the inputs, but then we look to see whether or not the patient is still undetectable or not, sort of jumping to the end of the story instead of looking at the first few chapters. So we use a very traditional social work model. When you get right down to it, we're doing an intake, a lot of which is for the Ryan White program, a full needs assessment, Individualized service plans are developed very similar to what many of your case managers in your communities and other service linkage workers are doing, and then a full referral cycle. And we're particularly interested in not only whether or not referrals were made, which workers are really good at, but we wanted to make sure that they actually followed up and made sure that the referrals were kept and that folks actually got the services for which they were referred. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about the protocol, and I'll show you our website in a few minutes. And we have a lot of materials because we really see this as an educational opportunity to push information out in the community about how to design these programs. Now I've had 10 years of really painful lessons learned. I like to make sure other folks are avoiding those. But as you can see here, you know, we're going through a full cycle, making sure that folks' most immediate barriers to getting in to see a clinician are eliminated and avoided and move them in quickly. This is a short pulsed intervention. 3 months in, 3 months out. That's it. Now, some folks raise a little eyebrow. That is really actually the standard of most service linkage programs when you look at them across the country, which I did when we designed this project. And the reason why is that, remember the 26,000 that are in those communities? We cannot hold these folks into long-term linkage. They need to be moved into case management, and case managers need to pick up the slack. And then also, now in all three of those communities, there are other service linkage workers and navigators that are now embedded in those settings. And so those are the folks that need to then take the client and work with them once they've been initially sort of Velcroed into clinical service. So in terms of the linkage and re-engagement process cycle, as you can see here, you know, we're doing the full assessment. We're also looking at productivity and schedule and timing. We're looking at turnover rates and also continuity, because a lot of turnover means a lot of discontinuity. And then we're also looking at that magic moment of transition from the linkage worker to the case manager to really find out what is the most effective model and how that really is helping folks to get really integrated and engaged in clinical services. A unique aspect of this project that most linkage programs are not using is a continuous quality improvement project. I review every chart of every client, over now 550 clients, because we really want to understand what happens with those workers and what happens with the clients. And then we are producing reports and really giving guidance and technical assistance to each of the sites about what's working but what's also not working. And we have an extensive chart review tool and other techniques that we can share with you once again on their website. So for the sort of pilot phase up through last June, we've served about 1,400 folks that were screened for referral to our collaborative, and about 40% of those actually agreed to be engaged in the service. And then among those folks, strangely enough, we didn't find as many newly identified individuals as we thought. Many of them had been lost to care, some of them for quite a while, some for not as long, the same standard lost to care definition that was used in L.A. And once again, our goal was to get them into care and at least have one medical visit before the workers started to disengage. But by and large, they're keeping the client longer than first visit. So on the good news, 75% of the clients were linked to care. However, that did range considerably and significantly from site to site, where one site had a much higher rate than the lower end of the third. And then we also found that sustaining the capacity to effectively link needs to really be looked at very carefully over time, because what we found in the second year cohort was the linkage rate started to drop. We think that may have been because we were finding more folks that have dropped out of care, and they're very difficult. Once they have decided that being out of care is okay with them, trying to get them to agree to come into care and stay in care is even more difficult. So that magic moment for the newly identified getting them the care, keeping them in care is critical. Because once they realize, well, you know, I don't really have to go to the doctor and I don't have to take those drugs, and, you know, I didn't die, I'm fine. You know, maybe I have a little cough, and, you know, maybe the emergency room might be a good idea, but I'm fine. So keeping them is really critical. And then, not too surprisingly, mental illness and addiction are obviously very high predictors of who's going to be linked to care. But also we have a lot of working folks that are in these communities and in the clinics that we're working with. And being full-time employed during the day is a huge barrier because guess what? The clinics are not able to accommodate their work schedules. And then trying to find them when they've dropped out of care during the day, which is when the service linkage workers work, is a challenge. And we've had a couple of workers that thought it was okay to approach the employment site to talk to the person about coming back, and that has been, you know, a big teachable moment. Boundaries. Outcomes associated with our clients, as you can see here, we are, first of all, using not only the health records, but also the CareWare and in Houston, a similar system to track folks all over time. All of the clinics that we're working with are Ryan White funded. Retention rates are very high, about 76%, but once again, vary from place to place. And frankly, the lowest one is where, not too surprisingly, the workers are not really engaged in the care team after the handoff. We looked at two of the sites because the Houston site is so much different from the Fulton and Philadelphia sites. Antiretroviral use for the two clinic sites was very high, although there was some range in that. And viral load suppression was also very good as well. Now, once again, and I didn't mention this, these are three sites with no Medicaid expansion. So these are folks that generally have a lot of challenge in terms of getting antiretroviral therapy on board and continuous availability. Lots of lessons learned about these workers, and in 1.5 minutes I will tell you all these things we learned. First of all, public health, really slow. If you're in that environment, plan for months and months and months to establish a job position, let alone get somebody boots on the ground out into the field. The more integrated the workers are, the better their practice is, and the better their outcomes for their clients is, because they are a part of the village, and the village is looking out for them and mentoring them and working with them. And Dr. Kwakwa can talk about her team model. Also, it's important that the clinicians particularly understand what to do with linkage workers. We do a lot of training of the linkage workers about what to do with doctors and other care team members, but clinicians really need to understand how to integrate them in their service. Turnover, very high, not too surprisingly, but it really impacts lots and lots of activities, including continuity of care. But frankly, workers are going on to better and more high-paid jobs. Administrative simplicity for some of these workers is critical. The folks with no high school diploma have hard time doing things like progress notes and typing things and telling us what they did with their time. The Ryan White program intake is taking up to 1 to 2 hours at least, if not longer, of time, and that's a huge amount of the workers' time. And then critical, supervisors need to supervise. They need to be reading the charts, and they need to be understanding what's happening with the boundary crossing issues and lots of other things. And I'm going to stop now, and the presentation will be on our website. I want to give you a plug. HIV Care Collaborative is our website. We are particularly interested in disseminating all the tools and materials, and we have toolkits and all sorts of other stuff available for folks, and we are going to be saturating all the conferences we can with lots of our findings. Thank you.